This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2. Parenting with Passion.
Today on Parenting with Passion, my special guest is child psychologist Louise Porter, and we're talking about self-esteem. How do you encourage your child to have a healthy self-esteem? And what might be some of the common misconceptions people have about how to do that? Hi, Louise. Thanks for your time.
Very welcome. Hi.
So, I mean, we hear this word self-esteem bandied about a lot. How do you explain the concept of self-esteem? What actually is it?
Well, I believe it's a comparison between how we are and how we feel we ought to be. Mm. So if we think we have many of the skills and qualities that we'd like to have, we're going to have a healthy self-esteem. And if we think we don't have very many of the skills and qualities that we should have, then our self-esteem will be low.
And why is it important for parents to understand this concept?
Well, in many respects, it's self-esteem is really the result of accomplishments. And so in some respects, it's not really a cause of anything, it's just a result. That's one of the myths, that if I have a healthy self-esteem, then I will
be happy and successful in life or something like that.
It really doesn't. It's not. It's more the result of past accomplishments. So if I achieve something well, I'll feel good about myself. So the first thing parents need to do is, rather than artificially inflate children's self-esteem by making them feel wonderful for doing something fairly ordinary, what they actually need to do is teach children to fall in love with what they're doing and to be delighted when they've achieved well, when they've mastered something.
That's very interesting. I almost want you to say that whole thing again. In your book, that you say something along the lines of, if you want your children to have a healthy self-esteem, do not praise them.
Absolutely.
Can you explain that?
Well, that's because praise is a judgment, and for very young children especially, if I'm a good girl for getting things right, then there's going to be a chance that I'm a bad girl if I get them wrong. And so if we think of self-esteem as two overlapping circles, how we are compared with how we want to be, delivering judgments raises those ideals of how we want to be. And we start to fear whether we can live up to those ideals, because we're told we have to be clever all the time, we have to be good at things, we can't make mistakes. So instead of praise, if we deliver information, not judgment, instead of saying, oh, good girl, well done, that's terrific, we say, congratulations, and are you pleased, or you look delighted, then the child's still getting feedback, but feedback that gives her information about what she's achieved, rather than a standard that they have to achieve every single time to be considered worthy.
Okay. I mean, the difference between saying congratulations and well done or great job, it the intentions are the same, and the difference can seem quite just semantic. Do those actual words really matter?
They make a huge difference, especially to very young children, because their learning language, by understanding nuance and flavour, intent, if you will. And so if I say to a child, congratulations, what I'm saying is, this is your achievement, you deserve to be proud of it. Whereas if I'm saying, oh, good boy, well done, I'm basically saying, you have to keep achieving to this level for me to continue to judge you well.
Can you give us a few more examples? Say your kid comes home with an artwork they've done, they say, do you like it, Mum? What's a good response?
Yeah, what they want when they ask, do you like it, they want something emotional. So they're not going to want something cold of, oh, yes, I really like the colours you've used, because they go, okay, so they want something emotional. When they're pulling praise from you, they want something emotional. So let's assume you do like it. There's a different scenario if you think it's pretty ordinary. You can't lie about that. But assuming you do like it, you still nevertheless can start with, well, you look really delighted with it. And they might say, yeah, I am. I'm really pleased. I did this and this. And you say, well, I agree with you. I think you deserve to be.
Okay.
So I've given something emotional, but it's still only an opinion. If I had an opinion that I don't enjoy Shakespeare's sonnets, that doesn't mean they're bad literature. It just means I don't enjoy them.
But what if it's not their best work? What if you look at it, they've maybe been lazy, they haven't really put that much effort in?
Yeah, that looks pretty ordinary to you. Keeping in mind that children need coaches, not cheerleaders. They don't need us going rah, rah, rah with imaginary pom-poms in our hands over everything ordinary, because then when it is special,
what's the difference?
Because, you know, we're just kind of paid to be nice. We've got no discernment whatsoever. So if you don't like it, you can, again, give an opinion. Oh, that's not my favourite one. You know, what do you think of this dress? It's not my favourite dress. I prefer your blue one. No, and that's only an opinion. And
but if you like it, go ahead and wear it. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you can add, exactly. But I'm not the one wearing it, and, you know, you're entitled to have a different opinion and different tastes from me. Yeah, so to go back to the painting or a story that they've written or something that you think, you know, really, you could do better than this, you can say, well, I don't know, is that really your best work? But also keeping in mind that adults don't do their best work every day, every minute of every day. We sometimes have slack attacks and off days, so you can sometimes say to a child, so you weren't really in the mood when you did that one.
I mean, what are some other ways of, I guess, acknowledging achievements in other contexts, you know? What about when it comes to, say, behaviour?
With behaviour, I'll often do, let's say they've behaved really thoughtfully and you know it wasn't easy. They've gone around to grandma's and they've had to sit around and be polite or have no one really to talk to, no one to play with. You can, on the way home, say, I really appreciate that you allowed the grown-ups to have their conversation. I know that wasn't interesting.
Yeah, right.
So I appreciate. And you can just use the same language that you would use with any human being. So, for example, if you're in a restaurant and the waiter brings you your meal and you say thank you, the waiter doesn't come back to you with, good girl for using your manners.
Mm.
The waiter comes back with, you're welcome. And so when a child does something that we appreciate, uses her manners or makes us a cup of tea or something, we don't have to say, oh, good girl, any more than the waiter would say that to us. We can say, thank you, I really appreciate it.
Mm. So it's getting back to that acknowledgement rather than praising all the time.
And if that's a difficult language for anyone, it's giving them information rather than a judgment. Now, let's say they've got 8 out of 10 on a spelling test. That sounds pretty good. 8 out of 10 sounds pretty good. But how do we know whether they're going to be cross with themselves because they spelt a word wrong that they know how to spell, but in test conditions they just made a mistake? So they might come in 8 out of 10 absolutely delighted, or they might come in 8 out of 10 feeling a bit despondent. So our task really is to say to the children, well, what do you think of that? And we know they can do it because when they're one and they've learnt to walk, they know they're neat. They think they're terrific.
Right, yeah.
So they're already able to judge. You know, I've been working on this now for 13 months, finally got it nailed. Aren't I neat?
Yeah.
And in adult life, we need to have that because people aren't going to tell us daily that we're wonderful. If we're waiting and holding our breath to hear that, we'd need resuscitation equipment. So we have to talk to ourselves about our achievements. Well, that worked really well, didn't it? I'm very pleased with that. I'm glad I put that effort in. It really paid off. You know, so what we need to ensure is through childhood, children retain that skill because they had it when they were babies and they're going to need it when they're adults.
We've talked about, I guess, praise, but what about criticism? What impact does criticism have on a child's self-esteem?
It can be pretty damaging if it's constant. But if you give an opinion that, oh, it's not my favourite of your paintings, or I'm not sure that that was really your best effort, what do you think? Judiciously, you wouldn't do it daily, but on the occasions where they know and you know it was a pretty shoddy job, that gives them confidence that when you do say that you think it's impressive, that they can believe you.
What about if you see your child, for example, react in a way that might make you feel ashamed, if they're particularly mean to another child or excluded another child, things like that? How do you sort of communicate in those situations without being the critical, you know, watching over your shoulder, nothing's ever good enough kind of parent?
You can do, I was embarrassed.
Mm.
So to use the I messages and talk about yourself, not them, instead of saying, you were really mean, instead of, I was embarrassed.
Mm.
And between siblings, for example, because children have such a strong sense of fairness, adults can remember from a quarter of a century ago when they were accused of something or punished for something unfairly that they didn't do or they didn't intend the outcome of. So children have a really strong sense of fairness. So often if there's been a dispute or one child's hurt another, I'll start with, I wouldn't let a bigger child hurt you and I can't let you hurt her.
Mm.
I wouldn't let him do that to you, I can't let you do that to him. So they're clear that there's no favouritism going on. It's just justice. And then you say something like, well, what did you have in mind and what way did you hope that behaviour would help? On the understanding that every behaviour of any human being of any age is an attempt to meet a need.
There must be a reason behind
it. It was a need that the child was trying to meet. So he's whacked someone over the head with a toy or snatched a toy off someone the need was for possession or for control over his own toys, not to have to share absolutely everything, whatever the need was, that need is legitimate. All we have to do is teach a less hurtful way of getting that need met.
Yeah, sure. Now, we've talked a lot about little children, which I know is your area of expertise, but I imagine when kids are young, a lot of their self-esteem and their parents would have a lot of influence. But as children get older, their peers would probably start to have more influence. So is that the case, that their self-esteem will be more shaped by how they interact with others as well?
It's always shaped by how they interact with others. But yes, as they get older, that circle widens to include more than their parents and siblings and family members. But in terms of their choice of peers, children who have a good relationship with their parents choose friends whom their parents would like. And so it's not a competition between peer influence and parent influence. It ends up that the peers have very much the same values as the parents.
That's interesting.
Unless the child has a really acrimonious relationship with the parents, and then two things happen. One is they orient to peers too soon, so their peer group becomes influential over things that really they're not ready for, like sexual debut, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And their peers are often antisocial.
Interesting.
So it's
okay.
Got to do with the quality of the relationship. A healthy relationship between the child and parent, and the child will choose friends that the parent approves of anyway, and the influences aren't negative.
Yeah. Oh, that's very interesting.
Tastes change. Hair length changed in my generation, coloured clothing. The superficial things change, but the actual values stay very much the same.
Yeah. Oh, it's been very interesting to talk to you about this, Louise, and thanks for your time this morning.
That's a pleasure.
That's Louise Porter. She's a child psychologist. She's the author of Children Are People Too, A Parent's Guide to Young Children's Behaviour, and lots of other resources. You can find out more at louiseporter.com.au.
This has been a Hope 103.2 podcast. For helpful articles, station news, videos, devotional emails, and more podcasts, visit hope1032.com.au.